Sound is rolling and clap.
Well, yep. Welcome back to the podcast.
Another one of these.
The podcast we do sometimes. Where we talk about Simpsons, you know. Dylan's drinking water with a lime wedge.
A bit of lime wedge and water.
And I'm drinking black coffee.
What's your favorite fruit to put in water?
Huh?
What's your favorite fruit to put in water?
Lime's up there.
Just like the most boring conversation we could open up on.
Don't know. Apple's alright.
Apple? Who the hell does that?
I
like banana in my water.
Oh, they're so mushy. The water would start to like thicken up towards the end.
Like a really bad milkshake.
I actually discovered a hack when I was in Prague about not getting hungover.
Oh yeah?
Just drink tequila lime soda.
Tequila lime soda?
Yeah, so it's
that's not the actual, it's not alcoholic.
It is.
Oh, lime soda. Okay.
So it's tequila.
Oh, right.
With like 3 limes in it and soda water.
Ah.
So just fizzy water.
You throw it back.
And you just drink it, but because you're drinking, every drink you have, you're having more water than you are alcohol.
I see.
It was actually a really, like, I was drunk, but I didn't feel like
stable.
Horrible.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it was,
sure.
Like, fine.
Be okay the next morning.
Fine.
That's the thing is alcohol.
Slightly groggy, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. That's the thing is like alcohol is just like you're dehydrating your body.
Oh, when you have like fucking 10 beers.
Exactly.
Oh, the next day is horrible.
It's the
nothing's
worst.
Worse than beer hungover.
Beer is definitely the worst hungover from my experience. Yeah, although wine's pretty bad too. Wine is like heavy.
This guy drinking wine. It's out of date wine.
But wine can't go out of date. It was just past the sell-by date.
Yeah, true.
But
I don't know, I like to think it's because it was out of date as well. It like had a different effect on you.
Maybe so. I mean, that's always going to be my experience of being wine drunk. the thing I find with being with drinking wine, with beer, it's like I am getting drunk, but I know I'm getting drunk, so I'm pacing myself because I'm aware. I have no awareness until the next morning.
Yeah.
That I was drunk on wine, you know what I mean?
Well, especially if you're used to drinking beer, you're used to drinking such a high, like, amount of liquid.
Yeah.
And then wine is like you're drinking
a little glass.
Yeah.
You think you're doing okay, but you're actually.
Yeah, whereas like a glass of wine is like debatably more strong than a pint of beer, so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like the units you're putting in.
100%. So. I did want to open up on a stupid bit though. We're just going to do that now instead.
Do it.
Do a little bit. How do I naturally go into this now? I do have some sort of sad news. Is I started an OnlyFans recently, and my account got blocked for inappropriate material. Which, like, I thought that was the point. Of
yeah, it's inappropriate.
OnlyFans,
like,
yeah.
OnlyFans,
I'm very
yeah.
confused. But yeah, they're suing me for it. So the guy actually told me this. I'm the first person in history to lose money from OnlyFans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How did you lose money?
Because they're suing me for indecent material.
Why is it not decent?
You had to subscribe to find out.
Yeah, subscribe to the Patreon to find out.
And my OnlyFans. I don't think you can do that in Patreon.
No, but like for extra...
Oh,
for
yeah.
extra information on how you can find Dylan's OnlyFans, subscribe to his Patreon.
Subscribe to my Patreon to find my OnlyFans. You gotta pay me twice. I need to with the lawsuit money. But I only got like one subscriber. It was a guy, obviously. It kind of looked like you with a fake mustache on the profile picture. We did it. All right, let's jump into the episodes. Today we are covering Thirst
well,
Trap.
Welcome back to Dylan Sebastian Ever Simpsons.
Oh my god, yeah, we're doing it all
forgot
over the place
to
today.
Say that. Yeah.
Welcome back to Dylan Sebastian Ever Simpsons podcast, the podcast that myself and Sebastian do to give people plenty of footage of us when they make a documentary about us. There you go. See, I connected.
Yeah.
Today we're doing.
You did.
Today we're doing Thirst Trap, a corporate love story, the 4th episode of the 35th season. And let's jump in. We know from the moment it starts, it's going to be a different episode. Mm. There's no intro. It's just Burns sitting on a stool being interviewed. The camera's all jittery. Really good animation there. And that was really hard to animate, conveying the natural motion of
yeah.
a camera, you know. But they did it perfectly. And yeah, he's put in front of a camera for documentary. He says that Persephone O'Dare wanted to save the world, and he wishes that was her only shortcoming. Just a great immediate Mr. Burns line to kick it off. We then get a title card 1 year earlier. We see her, Persephone, giving a lecture on her product Lifeboat, designed to turn salt water into clean drinking water in a clean and cost-efficient manner. We then get a title card for the documentary. It's called Driven to Drink, The Lifeboat Story. We get chapter one, the launching. The narrator tells us that
this story is about a little girl who had a dream, but it begins with another little girl who allowed us to use the footage from when she interviewed the first little girl who is no longer a little girl.
Persephone reveals she followed in Bill Gates' footsteps by dropping out of Harvard. Their car didn't even slow down on freshman movement day. She didn't even have one day in Harvard. It just comes to like Harvard and there's a table of gift baskets outside, and it's just the car drives through, grabs a basket, and leaves. She reveals that her grandfather was a World War II sailor who got stranded on a lifeboat. She reveals that he gave up, then died of quitting, of super dehydration. Says that she's looking for a billionaire to invest in the company. It's like, to Lisa, like, you know, if you happen to know any, like, sarcastically. And she says she does know Mr. Burns, who once clear-cut a forest because he thought a squirrel was looking at him funny. So much great.
I respect it.
Very, very Mr. Burns, yeah. She heads to a seminar for fossils on fossil fuels. Great play on words. It's in Orlando. She goes there to meet Burns. The guy hosting says that they might have to cut the panel short due to their third once-in-a-million-years hurricane this season. We just see a guy blowing away, and he's like, put this on my reels! He says the hurricane is now meeting up with a super fire. And Persephone says that saving the world, or says that the world is running out of water and they need a hero, and she believes that Burns' money could be their hero. The building then burns to pieces, and an oil CEO says that they have chemicals that can invest in saving the world. Granted, those chemicals turn alligators into Godzillas, but they have a bomb that can fix that. Burns says the salvation is a snooze, but he wants in on the Godzilla bomb. They shake hands. Persephone, this is the narrator saying this again, says she wasn't shy about hounding Mr. Burns, and he wasn't shy about hounding her back. First episode of a long time that they brought back, like, him releasing the hounds.
Yeah.
It was great to see that again. We then get a montage of her popping out of Burns' polar bear in his office. She's disturbing him during an MRI scan, and she spells out the company's cash flow chart in the sky with a helicopter. She says she sees Burns' life as a beautiful opera, and investing in Lifeboat can be the finale. She tells him to dare to choose success, and he's like, oh, of course, like how I choose to be born rich. Again, just, yeah, consistent great Burns gags like that throughout the episode. He decides to fund the company with his own personal income and gives her Cooling Tower A to use as his headquarters. Lenny says that it's his favorite tower, as it holds so many precious memories. And he walks away, and you see an outline of humans screaming their last breath in the tower. So good. He just sees that as a precious memory. Burns says that all the workers in Sector 7G are fired. Homer just goes, hey, that's me. Screw you, pig. It says they're all going to be rehired as lifeboat employees with higher salaries. Bless you, pig! And he then gets his wealthiest friends to get involved in the company. You see Rainier Wolfcastle is invested, and he goes,
when I invest, I look at the business's key fundamental. Am I under the delusion that I have a shot with the CEO?
We see everyone has an official title in the company. Persephone is the founder and status quo demolitionist. Burns is the chief change alchemist. Waylon Smithers is the purposefulness warlock. One of my only like major criticisms of the episode, I feel like Smithers being involved more could have added something extra interesting. He's barely in it.
Yeah, but maybe it's because it was so obvious.
I guess so. I just feel like, spoiler alert, in a few minutes, Burns marries this woman. I feel like it would have been an interesting thing to see how he reacted to Burns getting married, because it's the first time it's ever happened in the show, surprisingly. But, you know, because he loves Mr. Burns so much, it felt weird that he was just consistently supportive of them.
Yeah.
I see what you mean, though. I guess maybe it was too obvious, but I know I would have liked to have heard, just when there's a Mr. Burns episode, you expect Smithers to be involved somehow.
Of course.
I'd say he has four or five lines in the episode. He's barely
almost expecting a little side plot.
Yeah, totally. Something going on, maybe like him plotting against her or something like that. Now, to be fair, it's a pretty complicated story, so maybe they didn't have room for it, but I don't know, it could have added an extra something to it. Anyway, Carlson's his title in the company is Branding Magician, Lenny Leonard's is Storytelling Ninja, and Homer's is Competency Rockstar. The person behind the camera goes, competency. Like, say it again? We then cut to a lifeboat pep rally. We see Persephone and Burns playing on a bouncy castle together, and the song Fight Song by Rachel Platten is playing. I had heard this song before because it's like a song you'd hear in like shopping malls, I feel like. You know what I mean?
You hear it all the time.
Yeah, like I totally recognized it. But because of it being in the episode two or three times, I was like, I need to like listen to this song properly. And I can't deny it's kind of a guilty pleasure.
You like it?
It's a catchy song.
It's catchy.
It is catchy.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's
it's cringy.
Say,
don't get me wrong. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like it has a nice message to it, but it's very cringy in the way that it delivers the message.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very like it's written for 12-year-old girls, you know. But it's catchy. Yeah, she's literally just saying like, this is my fight song, the song to prove that I'm okay. I can't deny that I was bopping to it on my headphones. It's obviously intentionally supposed to be cringy because it's like, this woman is like making Burns feel young again. You know, they're listening to this song while on a bouncy castle together. But then Carol says, unlike when the place was a nuclear power plant, security is super tight now. And they all have to sign NDAs. And Homer says that he's terrible at keeping secrets. Like how he's not supposed to talk about how Lenny has a crush on his Italian tutor. We didn't see the lifeboat sales are going all the way up and are topping all the other water companies such as Dasani, Aquafina, and Duff 2O. Aquafina was my favorite one. It was just like they were mixing. Like they think it's a water.
Yeah.
That was good. Homer asks if it's a documentary where he doesn't know there's a camera, or if it's like The Office where he's always looking at it and does a big take so the audience knows when to laugh. Great little bit of shade there. And he opens the door to Burns' office and we see that he's marrying Persephone, and he just does a big take to the camera in a very like Jim Halpert fashion. We then cut to chapter 2, Persephone Monty. She says that she can't believe she's married to Montgomery Burns, the first man with no blood type. Burns says it's a joy, and waking up in the morning and seeing the door of her bedroom through the glass of his hyperteric chamber is such a joy for him. They soon become an it power couple. We get like a montage of all these different newspapers. They're on Forbes, the over 100 and under 100 lists. The New York Post's referred to them as Cradle Mary's Grave, and Nintendo Power had them down as We're Married, and their dress is Mario and Peach. Smithers says it's a joy to see a person with the world at her feet see the glory of Mr. Burns. We just cut to her watching him struggling to eat soup. Maybe it's not interesting to be, it's just something that I always argue with people over. Do you drink soup or eat soup?
It kind of depends. I would say both.
You would say both?
I know that's kind of a lame answer, but...
Nah, it's like a politician's answer.
Because if soup has bits in it, so like...
That's
you're,
true.
You're eating some bits, but then
yeah,
you're like slurping...
it's liquidy.
The other bits.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I didn't mean that. I feel like you're eating it because it's a meal, and you're having it with a spoon.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's true.
Yeah. I obviously get why someone would say that you drink it, but... Yeah, and there's usually bits in it, and even if there's not...
It's not a drink.
Yeah,
so you're
exactly.
Not drinking it.
Yeah, there's usually bits in it, and you're almost... Yeah, I would say most people have soup with bread, you know. So in my opinion,
like,
if
someone was eating ramen, would you say they're drinking
definitely
it?
Definitely
no,
eating that, yeah.
Eating
yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the age-old debate. We got to a board meeting... they're not letting investors drink the water as competitors could steal it from their urine. Homer says the tech salaries are the greatest. He even gave Marge 200 stock options to go grocery shopping. He cut to Marge being interviewed and she's like,
it didn't work at all. I had to put all the food back on the shelves.
That was my favorite bit. Instead of giving Marge money to go grocery shopping, he gave her stock options.
Yeah.
I just love the image of Marge like trying to buy something, being like, I could offer you like a share in Amazon. I just love the image of that.
I could offer you 1% equity in my company.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly turn into, you know, a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to buy like steak and eggs and bread. I just love the image of that. It's almost funny that they didn't show it. You just have to like imagine it happening yourself. She says the narrator says people were so secretive that they began moving the post-it notes with their passwords on their monitors away. And we see a montage of different post-it notes. One password was P123, another password was password, and another password was Homer. I can't deny I have one set passwords is that shit. I'm obviously good for them now, don't try and hack me, but there was a period where like my password was like my name. And like
so bad.
My age at the time or something. Yeah,
I
so
think the
stupid.
Worst thing is to have the same password for everything.
Because
you gotta think, if someone finds that password, even if you make a password similar to that,
they can go into everything. Yeah, totally. No, I don't do it anymore. The thing I find really dodgy now with Apple products is when you sign up to anything, they try to give you a suggested password, but it's like a password you could never possibly remember.
Yeah, I know.
So it's like just marrying you to your Apple products, basically. So it's like, if I wanted to sign in on something not Apple, there was no way me getting into it because I don't have access to that password. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I would never.
Well,
I guess
it's designed to like make you
rely on
click
them.
Save it.
Yeah,
so
I guess so.
But then what if you lose it?
And they want to make you reliant on them, you see. Because like, if I signed my Apple account on a different Apple account, I have access to everything. But if I got, like, let's say a Microsoft product, I can't access any of my accounts. Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's no way I'd ever do that. We then cut to Marge saying that Homer got so paranoid about all these NDAs that he couldn't even say how his day was. We just cut to him at dinner and he's like, I can neither confirm nor deny I had a day. We did cut to Frink saying that it was strange that they wouldn't let him see inside the machine, since his title was Chief Engineer of Inside the Machine. And he said that whenever a reporter came by, it seemed like they were trying to hide something. And a reporter comes into the lifeboat headquarters and they just put a sheet over Professor Frink. And he just goes, so beats working for Zoinkleboing! I would say that moment is a great example of like how an actor can make a line better.
I know.
Because if he just said, like, oh, somebody's working for Zuckerberg, not really a great, funny line. But because of Aguizera going, Zuckerberg!
It does make me wonder, like, when they wrote that, was it meant to be...
Was it meant to be
like
him
that?
Going crazy?
Yeah.
I would say so, yeah, probably, because this many seasons in, they know what to expect with Professor Friggs. So,
true.
Yeah, because that line, like, let's say if Lenny said it, it wouldn't be funny. You know, just, well, so beats working for Zuckerberg. But it's because of the crazy way Professor Friggs says it makes it one of my favorite bits of the whole episode. Just how crazy he does it. I always love hearing Hank Azaria talk about Professor Friggs. He said it's his favorite character to voice because, like, you know, if he's, like, having, like, a dull day or something or, like, got some upsetting news, that, like, Friggs would always cheer him up.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's like you can't be sad doing a voice like that. It just like puts you in a good mood instantly.
That's nice.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And he's on the calendar.
He's in the calendar this month, yeah. Maybe I'll do a
if
little...
If anyone has the official Simpsons 2024 calendar, you'll know that he's on the calendar this
month. Yeah, he's on March. Yeah. It's some robot machine, Bart's controlling it, and he's picking up Professor Frank and giving him a wedgie in classic
Bart. And if you didn't know...
Frank fashion.
You haven't changed your calendar.
It's still March.
No, but I mean, if you didn't know that this was the March one and you own this calendar, it's a reminder to change your...
There you go,
Because people just get a calendar and then it's January for the whole year.
I know, it's a really good sign of if you're having a tough year and things aren't really going well for you. If you haven't changed the calendar, you haven't literally just done this.
It's a sign that you have your life together.
Yeah, exactly.
If your calendar's not changed, you don't have your shit together.
I find that whenever I go to a family home, for some reason family home, like, you know, well-adjusted adults, they'll have like 3 or 4 calendars around the house, but only one of them will be up to date. The rest will be still on January
it's
or February.
So
I know, it's so weird. Like, why do you even need that many calendars?
Yeah.
You know? Ridiculous. But yeah, I'm sure many people watching this or listening to this have the Simpsons calendar, I would assume.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I don't know.
Best calendar.
Calendars aren't hugely in anymore.
That's true.
People don't get calendars.
Yeah, I for me, I like this is boring. I like organize my life with a calendar. Like I write down what I have to do in each date.
That's good.
But you know, that's obviously not how everyone does it. People have like probably portable journals and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I still like the calendar. It's like a go-to Christmas present for me. Like I'll always know my mom's gonna get me next year's Simpsons calendar. You know,
I imagine you waking up in the morning like SpongeBob, like, oh my god, it's a new day, and you cross off the date, you jump into the
employee
shower,
of the month,
and you jump straight into your clothes.
100%. Yeah, I wish I had the optimism and joy of SpongeBob. I struggle to get out of bed every morning. I am not a morning person, as you know. From having lived with me.
Yeah, don't even talk to Dylan if he hasn't had coffee. Oh my god.
It's honestly true though, as boring as that, as cliche as that meme is, I am literally a bit of a cranky fucker until I got my coffee in me. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not cranky, I'm a nice person, I won't like snap anybody.
No, me too. Like, I don't want to reveal too much information about myself, but I was having an appointment for somewhere yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to consume caffeine for 2 days before. I didn't do 2 days, I just did that morning.
Oh, you actually, oh wow, okay. And even that morning was rough on you.
It got to 2 o'clock and I hadn't had coffee. And I'd been up since like 7 or 8.
Jeez.
So, this is such boring conversation.
I'm quite interesting.
Who cares about this? Well, I don't know what I'm telling you.
I feel like it's not boring to listen to because the fact that you're not saying what it is probably making people assume a lot worse.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I couldn't drink coffee for 2 days before they inspected me and like, what is he doing? It's actually quite a tame, normal thing that he's up to, but doesn't want to indulge.
So that was painful. But then it's like, literally, if you don't have coffee for a long time and you're really feeling shit, it's like nectar.
Yeah.
It's fucking liquid from the gods when you don't have it for ages.
It's sex. It's better than sex.
It is. And it actually says a lot about how it's actually a drug.
Oh, it's definitely a drug. I'm addicted to coffee. I can, you know, I'm definitely fine with my alcohol, but I can not drink for a while and be okay. If I don't have my morning coffee, like, I do feel, I guess not jittery, because jittery is what you feel after having coffee.
Yeah.
I just feel groggy. I need that extra boost to wake me up.
You do.
I really do, yeah. Yeah, where were we from there? Yeah, we see this, Carol emailed Persephone some suspicions he had about the company, and the very next day he went missing, and they changed the name on his parking spot to just Nobody. And Lisa says that she idolized her because she was a female CEO who had all the power. And also says she was on the cover of Modern Hound, just like a magazine for hounds. It's just her and Burns and a bunch of hounds. Great magazine. We get another montage of like all these comments people are saying about her online. People are calling her Persephone, a CEO, more like CEO. It's boardroom, not broadroom. And a little gif of Ralph rolling down the hill, a gif that people actually use in real life. It just says, lifeboat stock prices be like. We then cut to Persephone on a bouncy castle with Burns at a birthday party, and Burns gifts her Twitter.
I wanted to give my wife, still getting used to saying that, a little something special for her birthday.
A Twitter gift card?
No, I bought you Twitter. The whole company. It was a bargain. The previous owner had to sell it after his self-driving Mars rocket crashed into the International Space Station.
And I'm going to predict the future right here. I could actually see that happening. And when it does happen, people are going to say Simpsons predicted it.
Yeah, I could see it happening.
It's so plausible, but that's right. The kind of jokes they make sometimes. They make the joke because it's so possible.
My theory, exactly, that's a good point. And yeah. My theory with like the whole Simpsons predicting stuff, a lot of Simpsons episodes revolve around, they're like a very tamed down Black Mirror.
Sure.
A lot of Simpsons episodes are just things that could happen that are quite dystopian.
Yeah, yeah.
And how they
because
they're
commentaries
it.
On what's so happening in the world around us.
They're actually quite realistic things that could potentially happen, which is why people like say they predict stuff, because whether you like it or not, we're living in a dystopia. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
totally.
My take on
the
it.
Simpsons is 1984.
Yeah.
No, yeah, totally. It is like it's a commentary on the world we live in. Not every episode, but certainly a lot of episodes. I mean, this episode, as an example, could so easily happen. You know, the whole thing of her trying to make salt water into drinkable water, but it turns out that they're actually a corrupt company just pretending to be a company that wants to save the world. Like, that's, I mean, I'm sure that already has happened.
It's
but
almost, like, there's almost 800 episodes.
Yes.
Yeah. a lot of them roll around things that could happen in the future. So obviously they're going to
get some things right. Yeah, yeah, totally. Cause they're smart writers and they can kind of spot things. But like, you know, this is so plausible, this line here. Because like, I know the Mars rover currently is like being operated by people in a space station somewhere, but it could easily be a thing that Tesla tried to make a self-driving one, because obviously that's what Tesla's obsessed with.
Yeah.
So it could easily be a thing that they do that someday, so people aren't controlling it anymore, but since it's not being operated properly by somebody, it could crash into the International Space Station. Like, it's just such a plausible set of circumstances it there.
You know what? How fun would it be if your job was to just drive the Mars rover? Actually, it could get boring.
I feel like it would get boring, yeah. Yeah. I feel like the novelty would wear off very fast.
Holy shit, I'm controlling this thing on another planet.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But then after a few days, you'd be like, right, I've just been looking at rocks.
Yes, I'm saying, yeah, yeah. I feel like it's a very exciting job.
At what point are we going to be like, there is nothing on Mars?
Yeah, 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 I know. We will not give up on Mars. There is so much fucking funding being put into Mars. Yeah. For God, imagine how much money's been spent on Mars.
I think it's mainly to do with, like, potentially inhabiting it.
I know, yeah, yeah. That's moving out there in case we destroy the Earth.
Yeah, we will.
all the billionaires will move out there. But yeah, totally plausible stuff. We didn't cut to an interviewer noting that they deleted all negative comments of Persephone off of Twitter and ask if they're a cult that can't take criticism. And Bernie's like, yes, I'm in a cult. It's called a marriage. I'm not sure if you're the leader in your marriage, Andrew, but I know Pilar, and I'm sure she'd disagree. And they both just laugh. It's just so, like, typical just husband banter.
I know.
Whenever you see that happening in real life, it just, like, makes me cringe. People being like, oh, we know who runs the house. We know who wears the pants in this family. Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, really unique comment you just made there. I'm not against being married someday, but I hope to never be a cliched husband who says that. You know what I mean? Screw that. And they were like checkered shirts and my jeans are tucked into my shirt. Please never make me that person. We then cut to an anonymous interviewer, it's clearly Lenny, saying that Carol was abducted because he attempted to expose the news that the lifeboat machine doesn't work. We then cut to another montage, a great montage in this episode, another montage of news reports. One is by the Tribune saying, "Thar she whistleblows." Another by the New York Post saying, "Lifeboat ships the bed." Another by the New York Times saying, "We're going to need a better boat." Another by American News just saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, your boat." We're going to cut to Persephone questioning why they would question a woman CEO but believe a silhouette of a man sitting in the dark. The documentary then becomes a Burns co-production and says that Lifeco will become hugely profitable and save the world. Which is, again, something I can see happening. Someone like, let's say, Netflix makes a documentary about a major company, and then that major company buys Netflix. You know, that's, again, like, so plausible. A major corrupt company, that is. We then cut to Burns saying that buying the company made the documentary... It didn't make the documentary stop other companies from making docs. Which, this confused me. So is this documentary meant to be a documentary about... documentaries? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was just so confusing. Because they were showing montages. They were showing different lifeboat documentaries.
It was a bit confusing.
Yeah, it's like, is it the documentary that we're watching a documentary about lifeboat documentaries?
I think so.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's very, very confusing. But yeah, it was all in good fun, but insane. We did see this, we cut to Peter Jackson, who made a documentary called Salt You Need Is Love.
We've unearthed even more never-before-seen footage of the Beatles, including 6 hours of them discussing drinking water.
And I actually totally forgot this scene happened up until just now, because it's so random, but I loved it.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
This is actually, probably my favourite part of the episode.
It's so random and, like, totally out of the blue.
It's also really
very funny.
Accurate to...
their dynamic.
Like, if you've watched old footage from, like, documentaries of the Beatles... It's kind of really accurate to how they would converse.
Really, it's like Ringo, John, and Ringo, John, and George are kind of procrastinating, and Paul's the one trying to get them to.
From what I've seen, Paul is the one that's always like got the ideas.
Come on, guys.
And they're kind of just a lot of it's like boring. There's a really funny clip where back in like maybe probably late 60s, where they're like, there's just people filming them in the studio and stuff.
Yeah.
And like casually John Lennon gets out like a zoot to smoke.
Oh yeah.
And he's just like
typical.
And he sees the camera, he's like, it's in his pocket because weed.
Oh, it's weed. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, of course, wasn't legal yet. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. Then it's him beating his wife. He's like, oh, shit. Can you tell me, was this actually Peter Jackson? Can you tell me, was this actually Peter Jackson? Do you know?
I'm going to say no.
It was?
It was.
Yeah, well, that's Peter Jackson. I didn't believe it was either, just because it's so...
I thought it was going to be a trick question.
Yeah, no, it really was. I wasn't certain was it either, because, I mean, it sounded like him, but it was just such a tongue-in-cheek parody that I wasn't sure would he be willing to make fun of himself in that way. But no, apparently it was. It really was Peter Jackson. Nice. Yeah, very, very funny. And also great details in the backgrounds when he's being interviewed. We see posters of Kong versus Smaug. And The Feebles, which is his first ever movie, it's like an adult puppet film. I haven't seen it. I really want to, though. It's not meant to be anything like his other work. It's a picture of the four main characters in The Feebles crossing Abbey Road, like the classic Beatles poster. I thought those are very fun details in the background there. It's all of his major works. And yeah, we get a clip of The Beatles, and it's Lennon just going like, the thing about water is you can't drink. This is going to be very bad Liverpudlian accents. Brace yourself. Lennon goes, the thing about water is you can't drink tea without it. And then Ringo goes, what if you made tea out of coffee? Lennon's like, what if you made coffee out of tea? And Paul's like, maybe we should play some music. And then George goes, what? I don't even know what George sounds like. He's the one you hear the least. George goes, what do you call a H2O? Oh, I bet no reason at all. We did cut to need to work on my. I think John's the most interesting accent.
It wasn't
accent.
That bad.
He's very, very nasally. Very kind of down here.
The thing with their accent is.
Paul, you know, kind of talks about you, you know.
But they're because it's like old Liverpool.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they're not like really, really Scouse. It's kind of, they have quite a soft.
Very, very.
If
unique,
you were like doing an impression of a Scouse, you'd be like. Oh, you're right, lad. Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, like, yeah, do, sure. They're like, kind of rough. Right, yes. They're posh Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting. Not like Barry Keoghan and Saltburn. But actually, no, I guess they would be more like Barry Keoghan and Saltburn. Like kind of posh Liverpoolian. But Dana Carvey, you know, the guy from... He's like Garrison Wayne's World.
Yeah.
He's an amazing impressionist. But he has like this theory that whenever someone becomes famous, they kind of become a parody of themselves. Because they lean into what makes them fame, what makes them popular.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of his like most famous impressions is Paul McCartney, and he says like he feels like Paul leaned into his accent so hard because he became known for it.
Yeah.
I think you can see that because when you watch like clips from the '60s before the Beatles like blew up, he's like, yeah, I'm Paul McCartney. Whereas you watch him now, and he's like, I'm Paul McCartney. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
I was with John. We were playing the guitar. We were going boop
dip dip doo. You know, I think it's a very, very good theory. You even see with like, I think especially you see with stand-up comedians that's like. They become famous or doing a certain thing in their acts and they lean into that way harder. I mean, my go-to example, because I love him so much, is Martin Orban. If you watch him in his like first hour, you know, he's looking like, oh yeah, Martin Orban, oh, talk like this. But you watch him like his most recent Netflix special, and he's like, I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's like really leaning into what made
I almost
him popular.
Think, like, yeah, it sort of changes who you are in real life as well.
It can't not, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of people like to say, like, being famous didn't change me at all, but like it has to somehow, because like everything around you changes.
Yeah,
you know, it's literally impossible, I would imagine. I don't know from experience. They then say the definitive documentary was made by a filmmaker so compelling that he made a 12-hour documentary about the national parks feel like 11. We see the definitive documentary about Lightfoot was made by Ken Burns. Do you know Ken Burns? A very famous American documentaire that I've only kind of became aware of recently because so many American podcasts I listen to like swear by him that he's
right.
Like the best documentary filmmaker. Yeah, his work ethic is insane. If you look at his IMDb, he's made like 2 documentaries a year consistently since like 1995.
Jesus.
And they're like long documentaries. They're like, some of them are like 3 parts long, an hour each, or like a full 2-hour documentary. The man just like lives and breathes documentaries.
Wow.
Yeah, but that is actually him here narrating the final bit of this episode. This is the real Ken Burns. Lots of cool guest stars in this episode. And I forgot to mention as well, Persephone is voiced by Elizabeth Banks, who I thought did a great job as the character. I did think she was kind of too dimensional, but I think that was the point.
Yeah.
Like, she's not revealing a lot about herself. She wants you to think that she's perfect. You know, I thought she did a great job with that. But yeah, we see Ken Burns' documentary is called Lifeboat, Abandoned Ship. We get chapter 1, The Percentage of Salt and Tears. Ken Burns reveals that Mr. Burns' team uncovered raw footage of the CNN documentary interview. God bless you. We see this, we then cut to the thing of Lenny with the his voice altered and the silhouette covering his face, and he says that the machine doesn't work, and he just goes, hey, I ordered this toasted. This is only lightly toasted. And we cut out, we see it was actually Homer. They made it look like it was Lenny. I think like they could have used a more creative way of showing how they made Homer's face look like the outline of Lenny's face. It was just that they just blurred it to look like the shape of Lenny's. If there was just, he was doing something that somehow looked like the shape of Lenny, you know, a more creative, funny way. Yeah, but he comes out and he's like, is this how you treat a whistleblower? We then cut to, we see that the hiring of lawyers to sue Homer proved to be quite the aphrodisiac for Burns and Persephone, and we see the lifeboat lawyers were relentless in trying to get Homer to sign a subpoena. Again, they're a very funny montage of them. He's trying to order something Krusty Burger and they pop out with the subpoena. One pops out of his Duff beer can and he orders pizza and opens the pizza and it's just a subpoena. Then Lisa follows Homer into the power plant after receiving a cryptic message that's revealed to be from Carol.
If I didn't do their dirty work, they'd tell the world my dark secret. I've been to 700 Jimmy Buffett concerts. I'm a parrot head. Cheeseburger in paradise!
Kind of an unfortunate joke. I mean, it is like a very common joke. They did it in South Park before as well. Like, Jimmy Buffett is like, you know, very low tier taste in music, but he died very shortly before this episode came out.
Right.
Yeah.
I also remember the
cheeseburger in paradise. Yeah. Cheeseburger, yeah, I said it twice. Yeah, definitely the best parody of his music. We didn't got them putting us.
No, what was it? It was AIDS Burger.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was Cheeseburger
it's
first.
It's an actual song, isn't it?
Cheeseburger maybe so, yeah.
I think that's an actual
Hamburger
song.
In Paradise? Yeah, maybe. Don't hold me to that. I really don't know much about Jimmy Buffett. But
AIDS Burger.
They changed the AIDS Burger because Carvin has HIV. Yeah. Oh, such a good episode. We didn't see that they put a substance in the machine called Jabatos, which is based off a soda bought by the company, that the lipo company bought. The soda was so strong that it could mask the taste of salt, so that was basically what they were putting into the salt water to make it taste like regular water. Lisa says that Persephone is a fraud, but her merch is solid. We then go to a conference in Springfield Elementary. Homer tells Burns that the water is harmful, and Burns is like, nonsense, my wife is a genius and everything she says makes perfect sense. We got to Persephone being like, the wheel of tomorrow is a aqua circle, let's make it rain. He says that he's seeing Homer says to Burns that he's seeing fresh love, not married love, and that once he starts to see the married love, that he'll start to see her flaws in 4K HD that he can never turn off. Think of her saying that water is the original crypto, and every drop is encoded on the biological blockchain. Burns reveals that he doesn't understand a thing that she's ever said, and Homer's like, now you're married, and since you're seeing things clearly, and he puts a plant with lifeboat water, he puts the water onto a planet and immediately rots. And the Burns is like, oh no, these kids are going to drink poison. And the bad news is, I'm going to be liable. To suggest that it was good news that the kids would be poisoned. Oh, just consistently great, Burns. We didn't see the kids drinking the water and they all immediately disintegrate. And cut to Ken Burns being like, that is what would have happened had Homer not turned the valve off. Sorry, we only put that in for the trailer. Do you know how hard it is to get people to watch a documentary that isn't about a small town murder? We didn't cut the Burns saying that if he can admit that their water is faulty, that maybe they still have a chance. He's saying this to Persephone. And she says that the underlying imaginary technology still works. We didn't cut the Burns in court filing for a divorce. He confesses that her problem wasn't that she's evil. He loves evil. It's that she still insists that she's good. And we didn't see, like, all these images of them together and an image of them texting each other. I'm guessing this was meant to be, like, a parody of the Amber and Heard trial, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Amber and Heard. The Amber Heard and Johnny Depp
Amber
trial.
Amber and Heard. Sounds like a weird comedy. I don't know.
A comedy, like a fragrance or something. Yeah. Amber and Heard. Yeah. the Heard and Depp trial. We see messages between them, and one is Byrne saying, I will love you till the sun expires and the moon loses its ways. And Persephone just gave him a thumbs up. We've all been in those relationships, or maybe just me. And we then cut to Persephone in the court just drinking the soda that they mentioned earlier. We then see the company went bankrupt, but Persephone refused to admit any failure. We got to an interviewer saying that she's left with nothing, and in the divorce, Burns even got her high school friends. It's just a montage of him hanging out with all these 30-year-olds. Very funny. And the interviewer asks her what happens from here. And Persephone goes, well, as you said, things have never looked better for the company. And the interviewer goes, I didn't say that. You're in jail. Pat, now we see this. She's been in jail the whole time. And she's, like, tied up. Lisa also finds out that her grandfather didn't even die in a lifeboat, that he's still alive, and his hobby is changing British spellings on Wikipedia. Just cut to them changing spellings to what, in my view, was the wrong way, changing favorite to, like, not having a U in it and stuff like that. We then cut to Byrne saying that he lost the most amazing woman he ever met, and he thinks that given a few more months, she would have even slept with him. Which I didn't make the connection there, but of course she didn't sleep with him because she only married him for his wealth. And the interviewer says that it was a pleasure to finally talk to him after seeing so much footage of Burns when they made their documentary, The Man Who Sold Horse Meat Sandwiches. We get a picture of Burns from the 1900s in a cart that just says, CM Burns Derby Delights on Lightly Toasted Thoroughbred. Fantastic. Of course he would do that. We then cut to him leaving the interview and going into his office, and he's being all strict, you know, evil Mr. Burns who doesn't care about anybody. And they, like, lightly open the door, and we see that he's bouncing on a bouncy castle on his own to the song, fight song, playing. Yeah, yeah. That was quite sweet, actually, that he, like, felt love for the first time ever, and he's, like, trying to recapture it. I know, it was nice to see, like, a little bit of humanity from Burns there. And then we didn't get our final tag of the episode, another fantastic bit from Peter Jackson saying that they also got 90 hours of the Beatles talking about umbrellas.
I once brought an umbrella into the shower.
How did you get clean?
I didn't, but at least I didn't have to take off my clothes. As soon as I opened my umbrella, it stops raining.
You need a sunroof on it.
What about a giant umbrella you keep in the trunk? Sounds like you're talking about an umbrellaphant.
Can we get back to work? Wait, I like the sound of that. Get back!
I saw an umbrellaphant at the circus. He was working for peanuts.
Pretty fun one. After you, sir.
Okay. So,
I couldn't gauge at all how you felt about this episode.
I didn't like this episode.
Oh, really? Shit, I didn't know that. Okay.
I didn't like this episode, and it's a shame because I like Mr. Burns.
That's why I'm surprised, yeah.
Thought this episode was absolutely all over the place. And
I mean, it was.
I understand that perhaps
it's a documentary.
That's the point.
Yeah, it was, and I actually probably should have prefaced that. If it did seem like I was jumping all over the place,
That
was the episode, yeah. Like, it jumps from one scene
to
another.
It got
and timelines and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it got too jarring. Mm. And I lost my interest. Like,
jeez, okay.
It just... Because of how all over the place it was, I couldn't really properly focus on this episode.
Mm.
I didn't think that the guest stars really offered much new to it.
Hmm.
And I don't think that the jokes really landed. There are a few funny scenes, but that's just The Simpsons. There's going to be some funny stuff.
Oh, of course, yeah, always.
Mr. Burns in this episode felt almost too Burns to the point where he was just predictable.
Sure, I
and,
get that.
And it was like, I feel like the fun with Mr. Burns is that he's so evil, you don't really know how evil he's gonna get.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, you didn't expect him to be that evil. In this episode, I didn't like that he became the person trying to be fair about things.
Yeah.
That's not like...
Well, he was the one being double-crossed.
Yeah.
Whereas usually he's the one double-crossing other people. Yeah, yeah.
The
dynamic was different here.
And it was just really messy. And... Mm. You know, there are a few great moments, but overall, this episode lost me completely.
Jeez.
Be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Surprise, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel, bad. I haven't rated an episode badly for a long time.
Yeah, but hey, it's going to happen.
I'm going to give it a 5.
5? Jeez, okay. Yeah. Well, I can't say I felt the same way. I had good fun with it. I can definitely see the flaws in what you're talking about. To be fair, I definitely see what you mean, that he was just typical Burns. But I don't know, I feel like we hadn't seen Burns in so long. Well, if we didn't have an episode where he was a main character in so long, I was just kind of happy to see him again.
Me too.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I see what you mean. He wasn't like, there was nothing unexpected about him in the episode. He was definitely like your two-dimensional evil Burns. There was no like unexpected moves from him here. I see your point. I did enjoy it though. I gave it a 7.5. I said that it was a fun spoof of documentaries. Said you can never go wrong with a Burns episode. You can just always tell that writers have so much fun writing for him and haven't gotten tired of coming up with new gags for just like how evil and despicable he can be. Like, one of my favorite bits of the whole episode was when he said the children are going to be poisoned, and the bad news is I'm going to be liable. Suggests that he thinks that the kids being poisoned is a good thing. Same criticism I mentioned already. I feel the episode could have had an extra oomph to it if Smithers had more going on.
Yeah,
that could have, like you said, actually, I think it would have added more to it if that was like a subplot of some sort, of him like plotting against them maybe or something. Like, he could have been the one whistleblowing rather than Homer. I know that's like probably like their obsession with always having the family having a main involvement in the episode, but
yeah,
but you still could have done that but had Smithers be the one whistleblowing. I feel like that would have, I don't know, it's added something to it.
Yeah.
I obviously prefer Burns to Smithers, but I do expect when Burns is the main character in the episode that the Smithers is going to be significant as well, you know. I thought there was great consistency of Homer being involved in the company but not knowing what he was actually doing in the company. I thought that was good fun. I did say that, what I mentioned already as well, that Persephone was very two-dimensional. Like, there wasn't a whole lot to her character. And I guess that was the point, but I do feel like maybe we could have done with giving her a bit more humanity when there was so much focus on her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like her as a character. I know I wasn't supposed to, but like, we saw so much of her that they could have given her more to make me like her a bit, you know?
For sure.
Mm. But yeah, this is definitely the most divided we've been in a while. I think for maybe even all of season 34, if not for the most part.
Yeah, I know.
We always kind of met up. But yeah, this is first time in a while.
Yeah.
I get it, though. I definitely understand your criticisms.
And recently as well, I've been rating episodes higher than you.
Yeah, last week so you did, yeah, for sure.
I've been more generous than you.
Maybe recently. So, yeah. Definitely last week. But yeah, you know, it happens. I definitely can see and understand all your criticisms. I just didn't really, I guess, feel them as harshly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does that. Let's jump into the news.
Dylan Simpson news. Dylan Simpson's news. Dylan Simpson's news.
Just two pieces of news this week. Kind of the small things, really. People went crazy on Twitter when they found out that mainly Twitter, they found out that the gif of Homer going into the bushes is 30 years old.
Wow.
It turned 30 years old last week.
I didn't think it was that old.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that crazy? Everyone was being like, I can't believe this. Obviously, it wasn't a meme 30 years ago.
No,
but people were just like, I can't believe this gif is 30 years old. It may be one of the oldest things to be used as a gif.
Yeah.
Probably not the oldest, but probably up there. Yeah. 30 years old. Crazy. And that was such a small piece of news. I tried to find something else. I thought this was a cool little article. The Cinema Blend posted the top 10 saddest episodes, which I thought was an interesting, different thing for The Simpsons. So, number 10 was The Last Temptation of Homer, which is the one where he nearly has an affair. I'd put that up there for sure. 9 is Lisa's First Words, which is like sad in a happy way. It's like happy sad. Yeah, which I think a few of those episodes would fall under that bracket. Happy sad. 8, Marriage Be Not Proud. I would actually put that one higher. That's the one where Bart shoplifts and they kind of like to salute him from Christmas. I feel so bad for Bart in that episode. I watch that episode every Christmas. I love it, but it's so depressing.
It is sad.
Very, very sad. Number 7, Dog of Death, which is the one where the family goes like bankrupt because they have to have a big operation for Santa's Little Helper. Definitely up there. Number 6, Lisa's Wedding. Again, I'd go happy sad because it's the whole thing of when she leaves him at the end because he can't accept the family. Very, very sweet. Yeah, happy, sad. 5, Bart gets an F, the first episode of season 2. Mm. I'd agree, because that episode was just like, no matter how hard Bart tries, he will always have a low IQ. It's kind of like the moral of that episode.
I know.
It's very depressing. Number 4, I Love Lisa. I wouldn't put up that highly, but I definitely would agree with like how much sympathy you get for Ralph in that episode. Mm. That I would agree. Number 3, Mother Simpson. I would definitely agree with that being the top 3.
Yeah.
That ending where he's on the car, one of the saddest moments of the whole show, for sure. Number two, and Maggie makes three, I would again say happy, sad. It's the whole thing of when he has to go back to the power plant at the end because they had Maggie and he has all those pictures of her in the power plant to spell out. It's like Bert put up a thing saying, don't forget you're here forever, and he changed it to do it for her. That's a sweet moment. And it is sad, but like in a joyful way. And I would say the same for this episode, happy, sad. Number one, they gave it to Lisa Substitute.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. It's a depressing episode, and you definitely feel really bad for Homer in that one, and really bad for Lisa at the end when Mr. Bergstrom leaves. But I think the moral of the episode at the end is quite joyful.
Yeah.
With like her learning to accept Homer, and then also the message from Dustin Hoffman's character saying, you are Lisa Simpson. I think, yeah, it's a mixed bag of like happy and depressing feelings. I probably agree, it probably is the show's most emotional episode.
For sure.
But it's a mixed bag of like, yeah, it's joyful, but also, yeah, I guess quite depressing. And yeah, let's jump into Steps Classics.
This is the new Seb's new classic.
Yes, I was very excited about this.
Do this every now and then. Just to switch it up a bit.
No, it's fun. This is the furthest back we've ever gone, or the most new we've ever gone.
And obviously, because The Simpsons is meant to, like, this podcast is meant to be to get people into newer Simpsons. So
yeah, and to show you there's plenty great episodes.
An episode that, like, I want to do an episode that I think will be a classic in years to come. So in 10 years, I would look back and be like, oh, yeah, that's I choose for classic.
It's funny you mention it because this episode is a newer season episode, obviously, but it's also 10 years old, I realized when watching it.
I know, yeah.
Mental.
So I went for season 25. It's Brick Like This.
Brick Like
And
Me.
I went for this because... Sorry, is it
Brick, Brick Like Me? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I went for this episode because, obviously, it was probably one of those episodes at the time that divided people because it's so out there. We're literally watching, apart from a few scenes, a full episode of The Simpsons in Lego format.
Yeah.
My only criticism of the Lego format is the frames of the animation were a bit too slow for me. Is a bit too...
The way they move,
And I think I understand it's Lego, and it's stop motion, but I think that's just because I'm used to everything Lego that I see is, you know, like all the Lego movies and the games and stuff.
I never made that connection, but I see what you mean now. The Lego movie, they definitely move a lot fluidly than they do here. I mean, I guess the only defense I can really think of there would be that they definitely didn't have as big a budget as like the Lego movie did.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I thought they did a great job though.
But what I love about this episode is that even though it's a Lego episode, they don't milk it.
No, definitely
not. And they're not like, oh, like the whole time isn't like, oh, look, this is Lego. This is...
They really don't. No.
They use the Lego as a really good plot device
for telling a grounded story,
and to make things convenient, you know, like we have the side plot of
Bart
destroying the school, and obviously he has been ordered to build it back together, wouldn't happen in an actual Simpsons episode.
Yeah, true, that's a good point. Yeah, they found a reason to do something fun with the Lego that they couldn't do in a regular
but
Simpsons.
But it somewhat feels like a very classic plot as well, which is what I like about this episode, is they didn't go too far and into it being Lego. They were like, well, we're doing Lego, and we'll use Lego as a plot device, but we'll keep it classic Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what I really liked. So the story was really good.
Yeah,
and it's obviously about, you know... We find out later on in the episode that comic book store guy.
Comic book guy?
Yeah. What's his real name, though?
I mean, we rarely hear it, but it's Jeff Albertson.
Jeff Albertson.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that was so maybe plain. A question when we used to do this.
It was, yeah. It certainly was.
Oh, no, it was always, what's the name of the store? Wasn't it?
Oh, Android's Dungeon. Yeah. That's probably what it was. I wouldn't expect anybody to know Comic Book Guy's name, to be fair.
He had dropped, was it like a Lara Croft?
It was, Lego figure? It was like a made-up version of Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah. It looked like Lara Croft.
Yeah, true, actually. More so than it looked like. Yeah, but it was a parody of The Hunger Games. It was called like The Starving Game or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Got drops on Homer's head, and he ended up in this like weird... Not coma, but just unconscious in this
Lego world. Lego world. He just wanted to escape it because Lisa will never grow up in this world, basically. Yeah. And it's very sweet.
And like, everything's perfect in this world.
Exactly.
As well. Everything nothing can break.
No one can die. Yeah, there's that great bit where he hits Krusty with his car, and he's like, "That's okay, thank God no one can die in this universe." And he puts his legs back together, but accidentally gives him Mr. Teeny's legs, and Mr. Teeny runs away with Krusty's legs, and he's like, "Hey, I'm a clown. I can't afford to look ridiculous."
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, fun bits like that, of them just taking advantage of the Lego setup.
Yeah, and it was really, really cool to see it as well. I think the actual, like, apart from my issues with the frame rate,
yeah,
it looked great. They absolutely nailed it. And
stunning animation.
I just love that it felt like a classic episode of The Simpsons in
Lego. That's a really good point. I never saw it that way, but it is a good mix of, like, yeah, they didn't melt the Lego thing and made it, like, what would The Simpsons be if it was Lego?
Yeah.
But then also did have fun with the Lego stuff also, where they could.
And it was super grounded, and Homer had, like, obviously a good lesson to learn, and his relationship with Marge in this episode as well. It kind of further reminded him, Lego Marge just reminded him of how great real Marge is.
Yeah, so, very, very sweet. I love it as well, where they're making love and it cuts out to imply they just had sex, and he's like, it just shows their faces, and he's like, oh, I feel so close to you right now. And it pans out, and it's their body parts are scattered all over the place. One of the best bits.
And honestly, I wouldn't mind if they did another one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to. Totally.
And it didn't feel too, like, for kids.
No, it was pretty adult. I was almost
expecting it to be like, oh, it's a Lego episode for the kids.
Yeah.
It's really not.
It is something that kids would, it would catch kids' attention. Actually, last time I was home, I was trying to show my brother Simpsons episodes he might like, and I mentioned there's a Lego episode, and he loved it so much he actually ended up watching it like two or three more times.
Nice.
Yeah, so it is one that kids can enjoy, but yeah, definitely there's a lot in there for adults also, 100%. I really agree with the bit as well, it's in the real world where he's making the doll thing with Lisa, or the princess place.
Oh yeah.
And he's like saying that parents don't usually enjoy playing with their kids. It's like, are you serious? It's like, oh, trust me, when I play with children, every bit of me is bored and dying for a nap. And honestly, that's exactly how I feel.
But I would say that's the opposite of how you feel when you play with children.
I walked myself right into that one, didn't I? No, honestly, I mean, love my brother, but I totally agree with what Homer says there. I just immediately get tormented when I'm playing games with him. Because, yeah, you know, children at that age are, you know, quite on the spectrum, so they end up kind of playing games that, like, repeat themselves a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very stimulating for them, but for an adult, it's like, this is excruciating, you know?
Like, yeah, I can't do kids at all. I've never been able to do kids. I haven't. Nah, dude. And it was, honestly, the few times I've tried to play with him, it's been a struggle. Like, I feel bad.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I just don't have the patience or attention span for them. But I'm not
built for kids. Nah. I can't do it. Like, my other sister is good at playing with my sister's kid. But I'm not. I can't do it.
Your sisters obviously have maternal instincts then, whereas we don't have fraternal instincts, you know? Because my cousin had a baby recently, and I went to visit her, and I was, like, so awkward, like, holding her and everything. And I don't even want to. No, I don't either, yeah. I can acknowledge, like, a baby being very cute, but I'm not like, oh, let me hold her. I'm like, I can appreciate you from a distance, you know? 100%. Yeah, I haven't. My mom even said to me, he's like, you really don't have any fraternal instincts. I'm like, no, and I'm not ashamed to admit that. Like, I don't want kids, you know. I don't have to. You know what I mean? Especially when you start to get, like, into your 30s, your parents do start to kind of, like, say to you, like, oh, you might want to start thinking about settling down. I'm like, no, piss off, I can live my own life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but anyway, we're going on a massive tangent there. The Lego episode.
So awesome. So episode fun. Classic, use the Lego in a great way.
100%.
I would give it a 7.5.
7.5. I'd give it a lot higher. I have to say, I've seen this episode a lot, and I've always had good fun with it and enjoyed it. I think I'd give it an 8.5. I really like it. My favorite bit probably is, again, the Bart side story, when
the Bart side story. It's like a parody of West Side Story.
I would not be surprised if they did that someday. Bart side story, or Evergreen Terrace story or something. But it's when he destroys the whole school, and Christmas Glitter makes him build it again, and he goes, I even have a friend here to support you. And like nails it in pieces, and he puts it back together, and he goes, ha ha. And then Skinner breaks him apart again. I just like that bit where he breaks him apart.
Oh yeah, he that was good.
He puts it together and breaks him apart again immediately. Yeah, it's so ridiculous. I also love when the skunk breaks into the school and Bart tells Willy, and Willy's like, oh, Scottish steak, and runs for the skunk. So funny. Yeah, lots of really, really fun bits. Wonderful, beautiful animation, like you said. They really just took advantage of it. And yeah, good fun. Definitely episode that would be high up. Like my recommendations to show people, like the later seasons are definitely worth your time.
For
such
sure,
a solid episode,
sure.
Yeah. All right, and moving on to Keep It Short. Yeah, as I've mentioned previously, this is my new segment where I just cover shorts from the Tracy Ullman Show, most of which I've actually never seen before. So this has been a fun one to do, just because of how consistently different it is to what the show is now and what the show was by its first season.
And last week we had Come On Barb Jump. What was the one last week?
Come On Bart, leap.
Leap, and then he leaps.
Yeah. That's literally the whole thing.
It was great.
Unfortunately, no old school Homer in this one. Interesting, because the show would never not have an episode with Homer. But this sketch didn't feature Homer at all.
Wow.
It featured everybody else in the family, though, yeah. It's called Babysitting Maggie. And it's basically just Marge telling the kids to keep an eye on Maggie. She leaves to go to the store. And we see Maggie electrocute herself by putting a fork into the plug sockets. But it just makes her smile. She then falls down. While this is happening, Bart and Lisa are just like watching TV, not taking notice of her at all. One thing I really noticed from these sketches, they really haven't found out who Lisa is yet.
Right.
Because she's like just as cheeky as Bart is. She's obviously not she would go on to be. Yeah, in this sketch, if this happened in an episode today, she would have been keeping an eye on Maggie, you know? And we cut to Maggie falling down the stairs, and Lisa just goes, did you hear something? Bart's like, forget it. They're just like snappier and nastier to each other as well. We then cut to her chasing after a butterfly, and she jumps onto the roof and falls off the roof. Lisa just goes, I thought I heard a thud. And Bart's like, you'll hear another one if you don't shut your trap. Like threatening to punch her. And the final bit is Marge coming home, and she's like, did you keep an eye on Maggie? And like, yeah, of course, she's right there. And she's there with holding the butterfly, and the butterfly flies away, and Maggie starts crying, and Bart's like, gosh, she's such a baby. The joke obviously being that like she survived getting electrocuted and falling off the roof. She was totally fine, but the butterfly flying away made her start bawling crying. It was a fun little short. It's so Maggie, especially as she looks nothing like she does now. But yeah, fun quick little short.
I feel like
sure.
If Homer was in that episode, it'd be over a lot quick.
What do you mean?
It'd just be like, come on, Maggie. Put the fork in the plug socket.
Put the fork in the plug socket, Maggie. Or it would go on longer because he speaks so fucking slowly. He really does. You know, now he talks like this and he's kind of fast paced. But in the shorts, he really sends every single word. It's so weird. But yeah, let's jump into the recommendations. Oh man,
what's
I'm in
gonna
little...
be this week. What's gonna be this week?
Praying to God. All right. Oh,
I've got it.
Here we go. Rock, paper, scissors.
All that
for the audio people. He did rock. I did paper. We mixed it up. My nice little one. My first recommendation is two pretty different ones this week. Actually, is Vanya. Have you heard of this at all? The one man show with Andrew Scott.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I've been trying to see these screenings of national theater shows for ages because I'm very interested in. They consistently make amazing theater, but they don't do as many screenings of it, obviously, as like an actual movie. But I managed to be free an evening that Vanya was showing, and it was fantastic.
Nice.
It's a one man show based off an Anton Chekhov play that's originally written for like a huge cast of characters. I think it's like 6 people. But in this version of it, Andrew Scott, you know Andrew Scott, obviously.
Yeah.
He plays all the characters on his own. It's
That's sick.
He's insane. It's so good. He jumps in and out of the characters so seamlessly, but he plays them all so distinctly different that like you never get confused about who's who.
Mm.
And yeah, it ends up becoming like this kind of like really beautiful message, like how we're all kind of similar people in some way. We're all interconnected, and Really, really beautiful. It was funny, but it had a profound message at the end. I mean, it's a very old play. If you don't know Chekhov, he's hundreds of years old and dead. But I think they did a really fun, fresh way of updating it for modern times. And yeah, just obviously the main reason why I would recommend it is Andrew Scott's performance, and it is just sensational. I mean, he's been blowing me away recently. Like, I saw All About Strangers, he was amazing in that. I watched Fleabag, I thought he was really good in the second season. And seeing him in this, seeing him kill in so many different mediums has been really cool and inspiring. Obviously, especially inspired by him because he's an Irish actor. But yeah, seeing him command an hour and a half long show on his own was just super inspiring. He didn't miss a beat in it. Insane. Yeah, really, really recommend. If you have, like, it's on National Theatre's streaming service, so you can access to that. Otherwise, I think they're still screening it across certain cinemas. In the UK, anyway, for sure. Maybe even in Ireland. I'm not too sure. I have no idea about America. But yeah, well worth your time if you can find access to it.
Nice.
That
sounds
good. Amazing show. Yeah. What about you?
So, I want to recommend a YouTube channel.
Okay, cool. I think we've ever done that, actually.
Yeah, I think I might have before.
Okay, cool. I ever have, surprisingly, yeah.
Called Outdoor Boys.
It's the Outdoor Boys. That kind of vibe?
It's not like that. It's it features videos like winter survival camping in Alaska. Camping and fishing on floating cabin built from scratch.
Jeez, some sort of Bear Grylls type shit going on here.
Yeah,
then.
Swamp survival camping, no tent.
Right.
So
Jesus,
this guy is incredible because
one guy.
He sometimes
outdoor
brings
his
kids.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah, how old are his kids?
Quite young.
Jesus, yeah. Interesting, right?
And he'll just randomly decide, okay, I'm gonna just get in a boat, go to Alaska. And go survive for a month. And
from where is he based?
The US somewhere.
Okay, still probably a long journey to Alaska.
Yeah, and he's just like, it's so interesting because you almost learn survival skills from it.
That's cool.
And it's really calming to watch as well.
Yeah.
Because he's never like panicking about anything. Everything comes so easy to him.
That's cool.
And it's just really nice to watch. A breath of fresh air, literally, like just a guy walk around camping. Like, you don't see much stuff like this. Everything's so, like, online is so quick and fast paced, and he just has these really nice slow videos.
That's awesome.
Camping for a few weeks, and it's cool to like see how he survives because he won't bring like food with him.
God, yeah. He's just surviving on out in the wilderness.
Yeah,
it's interesting that you're saying it's kind of relaxing to watch because it's like the man's fighting for his life.
Literally, but it's relaxing.
He's chill about it. I guess it can almost be like an inspiring message of like, if this guy can put himself in these life-risking situations and be relaxed about it, you can be relaxed in your regular life too.
100%.
You know, yeah, I guess it's probably the message that he's putting out there. That's cool. I read this thing on I didn't read this actually, I listened to it on a mental health podcast I'm listening to recently, but a quote that really stuck with me, and probably a motto he follows too, if not, maybe he doesn't know the exact quote, but a philosophy he lives by for sure, is slow is smooth and smooth is fast, which is a great quote, I think. Basically means like, if you're in a hurry to do something and you're overthinking it, or you're trying to do it fast, you'll end up doing it wrong, so it'll end up taking you longer. Whereas if you go in taking your time, you'll get the job done faster in the long run.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That makes sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That seems like what he's doing. He's putting himself into these situations where he has a lot to figure out, but he's taking his time being relaxed about, which is helping him solve problems faster.
It does work.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That sounds really cool. Yeah, Outdoor Boys. I'll definitely
check
him out. Love videos like that. And obviously, just seeing the scenery and stuff like that too is probably amazing.
It's beautiful.
Alaska, especially, would be one that I definitely will check out. Cool. You always have so much more interesting things than me. I watch movies. My second one is I Used to Go Here. A coming of age comedy drama, which as you know is like my sweet spot. I always love movies like that. It's on Amazon. It came out in 2020. I'd imagine that maybe it got sort of left in the dusk because of COVID. But
yeah.
I think it's fantastic. It's basically about Gillian Jacobs. She is an aspiring author, and she published a book that isn't getting a whole lot of recognition, and she goes back to her college to promote the book. She ends up like kind of like reliving her college days, and like she's kind of like yearning for her youth again.
Nice.
And very sweet, quite relatable movie. her lecturer in the movie as well is played by Jemaine Clement, you know, the New Zealand guy. He's in like Fly the Conchords.
Oh yeah,
that dude. Yeah, and he plays that lecturer fantastically as well, I think. And I think Gillian Jacobs is just, you know her, she's in like Community. What else big is she in? She's in season 2 of The Bear, if you haven't seen yet. A brilliant actress anyway. She just plays like an every woman very well and relatable. You're just constantly rooting for her. I just thought it was a very fun, sweet, like heartbreaking but also funny, like a good mix, comedy drama. Just like definitely hit my sweet spot. That's available on Amazon now if anyone's interested. I had a great time watching it. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, any more recommendations for you?
To be honest, I don't this week, guys.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's alright, I was wondering.
It's been, I haven't consumed a whole lot.
I know, it's tricky when we're literally recording a week later. It's like, how much can you really watch in that space of time? Yeah, you know. And like we both really like Dune, but it doesn't feel worthwhile to recommend
that. I don't think it's fair to just plug Dune because it's like,
everyone's
what
seen
use
it.
Is that?
Yeah, what we want to do is shed light on lesser known things that people might not have seen. Dune was fantastic and worth your time, but
I loved it.
Everyone will tell you that.
Yeah.
it's mainstream popularity, yeah. Cool, let's jump into the questions then. In almost becoming pretty typical fashion now, which I do like, is we have one Simpsons question and one not Simpsons question. So
let's start with the Simpsons.
Start with the Simpsons. Mind the Milhouse. A page just puts funny pictures of Milhouse. Little Milhouse memes, basically. Asks us, favorite relationship on the show?
Favorite relationship on the show?
Yeah, I'd be intrigued for you. I actually have no idea. I mean, I've mentioned many, many times, and I stand by it, that my favorite relationship is Homer and Lisa. Brick Like Me being a great example of how wonderful the relationship is. I think what makes them so wonderful is that they're the two most distinctly different members of the family. So the fact that they can love each other is just really beautiful and like a message of how we can like and appreciate people who are nothing like us, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, I just love the dynamic. I mean, Homer clearly has such a sweet spot for her. I mean, she is clearly his favorite child. I just love the dynamic. And when they meet halfway with something that they wouldn't typically agree on, I just think it's, a really beautiful testament of how different people can,
that's really cool,
can link up. Yeah. I love their relationship, yeah.
I'm going to go for Barney with Booze. I'm joking. I'm actually gonna go Mo.
Okay.
But I'm gonna go for Mo with the whole bar.
With the whole bar.
Like with Homer, Lenny.
His relationship with them as a unit. Yeah.
With them, the gang in the bar.
Yeah. That's a good example, yeah, because he jumps around a lot. Sometimes he'll be the abusive barman who just wants them to pay up. Or sometimes he'll become like their therapist.
Yeah. And that's what
yeah.
I like about it is I like
for sure.
that, that he does really care for them.
He does. Yeah, he loves them.
He has a very strange way of showing it, but you
for
know he
sure.
does.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it. That would be my favorite.
That's a good example. Yeah,
I just find
clearly,
that one interesting.
Yeah, because he clearly does love Homer, Lenny, Carol, and Barney, but his relationship with them can be complicated.
And they seem
for
to
sure.
be his only business. So.
Yeah. Literally just the four of them are buying enough alcohol on a nightly basis to keep him open. Certainly Barney. Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to just say Homer and Lisa, because anybody who's listened to the podcast knows that that's my favorite relationship. Other ones that like kind of popped up into my head is, I think Marge and Bart is an underrated one. I like them a lot as a duo. We definitely don't see them as much. That definitely duo we see the least of the four. I like Homer and Flanders a lot.
Yeah,
they're a fun dynamic, especially when you get them to work together. There's a really interesting dynamic there. I like
Homer and Chief Wiggum.
Oh yeah, they're great too.
Yeah, they
totally.
Always have
yeah.
good moments.
They always have good moments, and they're fun to put together because you'd expect them to be maybe too similar, but they always find a fun way to make them different. I mean, I also love Wiggum and Lou. that dynamic is always so fun because Lou should clearly be the chief.
And I like Homer and Wiggum because, like, there's episodes where Wiggum is the head of police and
exactly.
like, they don't really even, like, know each other. But then there's episodes where they're, like, at a gig together and, you know.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like their relationship. Who else is up there? I mean, I know they already said it, but I love Burns and Smithers. I mean, Smithers makes Burns because you need to have, with a character that ridiculous, you need to have a sort of sidekick by his side also. So I think their dynamic, that makes him so much as a character. I like Bart and Krusty a lot.
Yes,
their relationship's quite complicated because Bart idolizes him but can also see his flaws, so I enjoy that a lot too. Yeah. Total sidetrack, I'm just remembering. one more gag that I forgot from Brick Like Me that I thought was so funny is when Homer starts seeing reflections of the 2D animation Homer.
Oh, yeah.
In his reflection, and he passes it, the Quickie Mart, and sees it, and he's like, "Go back where you belong." And Apu thinks he's shouting at him.
That's a great moment.
That just came back to my head, and I was like, "How did I forget that? That gag's so funny." And just because I'm saying that, I also really love a Homer and Apu's relationship.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They're a good one because Apu is smarter than most of the male characters in Springfield. Their dynamic is fun because Apu is like a real voice of reason for Homer. Yeah, awesome question. Thank you, Mind Millhouse. And final question is from Ali Gilbert, a stand-up comedian friend of mine who asked a stand-up question. Favorite stand-up special?
Ricky Gervais.
I had a feeling.
His first US tour.
His first one. Is that out of
America,
England?
Out of England, yeah.
Out of England is great.
Out of England is just Ricky Gervais at his best. I know, like...
He's having so much fun.
Yeah, it's a predictable choice for me, but also, like, this is... like peak stand-up. It's so fucking funny.
It's so good.
Start to finish, it's just non-stop.
Yeah.
And he's having so much fun doing it. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, one of my favorite bits. I can't remember what he's reading. He's reading something about... It's like a list of things to do before having anal sex or something.
Yeah, he got a leaflet from like a sex clinic.
Oh, yeah. And it's like giving you an example of like fruits you can use to practice.
Yeah. Like a watermelon.
Like a watermelon, yeah. And then he just goes, e.g. grapefruits. And then he just like, is the stitches at e.g. grapefruits? Because it is just a great leaflet.
So ridiculous.
That is so funny, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's my... If I had to give a definitive answer, my favorite special is definitely Mike Birbiglia's Thank God for Jokes.
Okay.
Which is, again, expected for me to say him. But it is my favorite special. It's what made me want to do stand-up. It's a great mix of, like, Mike Birbiglia does these one-man shows that are more dramatic but still hilarious. And they all are themed about different things. But Thank God for Jokes, the theme is jokes, which is interesting. He talked about how much he loves jokes. In sometimes a dramatic way, but it's still super funny. And it, the whole thing literally just feels like a love letter to comedy. Really beautiful. It's on Netflix. I highly, highly recommend. As is all of his other specials I also love. I mean, all of them would be my top five. Like, the new one and The Old Man in the Pool and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. All fantastic. If I had to say one, Thank God for Jokes. Also up there, I would put Mark Norman's special Out to Lunch. And Sam Earl's special, I Got This. You can watch both of those for free on YouTube.
Nice.
And obviously, everyone knows how much I love Sam Earl and Mark Norman. Don't need to praise them any more than I already have. And I'd also put Neil Brennan's two specials. I mentioned him before, too. He also has called, like, more dramatic one-man shows. That's, like, great jokes. Blocks and Three Mics. Obviously, I'm a big comedy nerd here, so I'm indulging. I'll leave it on Three Mics. Three Mics is a great, unique special to get into if you ever feel like bored of the regular stand-up formula. Because what he does in that is he literally has three different microphones and they're all different styles.
Mm-hmm.
So one is emotional, one is like contemporary stand-up, and one is one-liners. So he jumps to three different mics and does different styles. So it's like, it's one special that feels like three. It's done very uniquely and cool, yeah. Yeah, those would be the top ones pop into my head anyway, for sure. And I love all the Ricky specials too, don't get me wrong. Humanity is my favorite special from him personally.
Okay.
Yeah, and it might be a bias because I saw it live, but even watching it on Netflix, I just think the jokes are just flying in that one. Just so good.
I know, it's definitely up there.
Yeah, the one about the dogs, or the one where he says all the jokes that he wasn't allowed to tell the Golden Globes, that whole bit towards the end is brilliant. Yeah, very, very fun special. Yeah, two great questions. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
And I think we'll hear from there.
Nice.
We're very high-pitched there.
The weird voice.
Thank you guys, as always, for watching. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to follow on the Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We're on everything now.
Show your friends, show your family.
Yeah. Show your family. Show your dad. I think your dad needs to see this. Show your dad our review for Thirst Trap, A Corporate Love Story. I think he needs to see it. Please, someone, if you actually end up showing your dad, let us know. And
show the children locked in your basement.
They need some entertainment.
Yeah.
We'll leave on that light note. Guys, thank you, as always, for watching or listening, and we'll catch you real soon.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.